Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, welcome to another Manna from Heaven, the first Manna from Heaven for the month of July. Today's July 1st, and we put June behind us, and we look forward to a great month in the Lord, full of activity, soul winning, praying, evangelism, good works. We're looking at Babylon, mystery Babylon, the end-time enemy of the Lord's church. And, of course, this is never, this series this week should never pass for an exhaustive study on Mystery Babylon. We are just simply making some mentions. We haven't even scratched the surface yet. But I think we've been doing good. We've been gaining some understanding. Yesterday we talked about how Mystery Babylon is the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. She holds a cup in her hand, does Mystery Babylon. That cup is a mixture of doctrinal abominations, doctrines of demons, if you will, moral abominations, because morally the Roman Catholic Church, the Vatican, the Pope, the Cardinals, the Archbishops, the Bishops, and the Priests are morally bankrupt. Doctrinal abominations, moral abominations, and when you add the two, they are spiritual abominations. So that's the cup which the woman has in her hand. It is the cup of coexistence, the coexistence of many pagan faiths mingled into a cocktail and turned into one. One drink, one stench, one foul drink. Well, today we want to look at the colors. What are the colors? Revelation 17 tells us you can identify Mystery Babylon because her colors give her away. Let's turn to Revelation 17:4. Revelation 17, verse 4. Well, let's start at verse 3. And he, the angel, carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness. And I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast. That's the Antichrist. That beast had was full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet. There were the two colors, purple and scarlet, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations, filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was the name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. Her colors. What are her colors? Now, before we get into her colors, I still have some audio I want to play, which I couldn't fit in yesterday, but it's so important just to remind us that one of the key features of Mystery Babylon as the Babylon of Nebuchadnezzar is that Babylon goes after our children. Babylon goes after our children. So I have an audio here where I want to play. It's entitled Sexual Abuse by Roman Catholic Priest. Sexual abuse. Now, again, Babylon, in all its different shades and colors, in all of its stripes and colors, whether it's the drag queens coming for our children or whether it's the liberals who are introducing to our children all of these different genders. You know how now the liberals have over 150 different kinds of genders when God said there was only two, male and female. God said there were two. The liberal says there's 150. And they bring confusion to our children's minds, little tender minds. So the liberals at the school, at the Department of Education, are introducing sexual confusion. The drag queens are assisting in that. And, of course, the Roman Catholic priests are doing damage to our children. This is all part of Mystery Babylon. This is all part of this end-time movement to pollute every segment of society. But remember, saints, they're not after a 63-year-old like me. They know my days are numbered. They know that my time on earth, is short. How many more years do I have to live? Are they gaming for me? Are they going after me? Are they targeting me? No. They know that I will soon die. If the Lord tarries, I will soon die. My generation will pass on with me. So who are they after? They're after our children and our grandchildren, because they know that if they can pollute the minds of our young people, our 17-year-olds, our 18-year-olds, if they can pollute their minds and if they can get to our grandchildren, the church is done for. The church, it's over for the church. The church will become non-existent. That's why they have this agenda to go after the very young. So let's listen to this audio. In case you thought the Roman Catholic Church were our brothers and sisters in Christ, well, they're not. Why? Because Roman Catholicism preaches a different gospel. It is a gospel of works. You cannot be saved by works. You're saved by grace. That was the whole purpose of the Protestant Reformation, to stand up for the Word of God and say, no, your system of seven sacraments, which we must all keep in order to be saved, is a system of works, whereas salvation is a work of grace, God's amazing grace to save a wretch like me. So it's a false gospel. It's a false church. It has false doctrine. It promotes false worship, the veneration of Mary as co-redemptrix with Christ. No, there's only one mediator between Christ and man, the man Christ Jesus. We can go down the line. It's a cult. It's Mystery Babylon, plain and simple. So, yes, while we do love Catholics and we are sympathetic to the plight of Catholics, who have been deceived into thinking that the Roman Catholic Church is the true church, we fight against the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church. We are to contend for the faith against the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church, and we sign no peace agreement with them. The Reformation, as Bishop Tony Palmer said, is over. It's not over. The protest is not over. We're still protesting while we have breath, while we have life. We're still going to protest. So here is further proof that the Roman Catholic Church is indeed Babylonian in its core.
The Catholic Church is facing scandals and being forced to pay millions of dollars.
In the 1980s and 90s, the press reported crimes that seemed inconceivable.
Sins of the fathers.
Case after case of alleged sexual misconduct.
Committed by Catholic priests and covered up by bishops.
The bishop was warned about caustic behavior, but kept moving him around.
Now remember, the sins are committed, the crimes are committed by the priest, but covered up by the bishops. If you look at your little picture in the outline there, the bishops are the ones in purple. Those are the bishops. The archbishops and the cardinals are the ones in red. So bishops in purple, archbishops and cardinals in scarlet. That's the color of the great harlot.
In 2002, revelations reached a crescendo.
Sparked by the release of thousands of pages of documents.
Responding to the crisis, America's bishops enacted reforms and made a promise.
To bring an end to sexual abuse in the church.
More than a decade later, new disclosures continue to make headlines. Some priests have faced consequences, but what about the bishops who covered up their crimes?
Nine-year-old Father Gilbert Gothe has admitted that he sexually abused at least 35 boys.
In 1985, the first case of a priest accused of sexual abuse to get major media attention came from the small town of Henry, Louisiana. Nearly as shocking as the charges was the fact that church leaders had heard allegations for years.
In sworn statements, the head of the local diocese, Bishop Jared Fry, has admitted learning about a child molestation involving Father Gothe 10 years ago.
An article about the Gothe case caught the attention of Barbara Blaine, a devout Catholic who says she had been abused starting at age 13 by her parish priest, Father Chet Warren.
That abuse was happening during the time that I was growing up and discovering who I am as a person. So the whole coloring of my psyche was that I was evil and made this good holy priest sin.
At age 29, Barbara reported Father Warren to officials in her diocese, all the way up to the bishop. But over the next few years, her frustration grew as Warren remained in ministry.
Those church officials were clearly not helping. They were only making matters worse for me. And so I thought, I'll just find some other victims. We can research this and educate ourselves, and we'll figure this out.
Although Warren has denied wrongdoing, seven more women would make allegations against him before he was suspended from ministry in 1993. By that time, Barbara Blaine's network of victims had grown into the hundreds and taken the name SNAP.
Survivors Network for those abused by priests.
As you were.
Exactly.
In the early to mid-90s, the way our movement grew was by these talk shows. Every time one of the shows aired, more victims would contact us.
How the Catholic Church kept these confessions silent for so long, despite reports from three states.
As more scandals broke, it became clear the problem was often not just crime, but cover-up.
Every bishop is the ruler of his own diocese and reports only directly to the Pope. And so every bishop was following his own policy. Some were more proactive. Some were completely negligent. And some were criminal in that they were covering up known abusers and failing to report them to law enforcement.
When people come forward to the bishops to tell them about how they've been abused, it's more like, well, call my attorney.
And SNAP encouraged people contacting lawyers, people contacting prosecutors. Above all, their aim was to get potential molesters out of ministry.
It was a task made more difficult by the fact that the church's monetary settlements usually came with confidentiality agreements.
That prevented anyone ever knowing how bad it was inside the church, which is what they were just trying to prevent the secrets from getting out.
As a young priest at the Vatican Embassy in Washington, D.C., Thomas Doyle had co-authored a report in 1985 that warned sexual abuse cases were probably the single most serious and far-reaching problem facing our church today. And that was nearly 17 years before the earthquake that hit Boston in early 2002.
John Gagan is accused of molesting and raping boys as young as 4 years old over a period of 34 years. But documents uncovered by the Boston Globe suggest church officials covered up Gagan's crimes.
The documents showed that there were people trying to alert high church officials and were often just ignored.
What's more, Father Gagan and other accused priests had been protected by Boston's Cardinal Bernard Law, once called the most powerful Catholic in America. By the time the U.S. bishops arrived in Dallas for their annual spring assembly, they faced media scrutiny like never before.
A three-month investigation by the Dallas Morning News reports nearly two-thirds of bishops protected priests accused of sexual abuse and allowed them to keep working over the past several decades.
The leaders of the church devoted their entire agenda to the sex abuse crisis.
There was really no other topic that was worthy of our attention.
The church is lucky to have had Bishop Wilton Gregory leading the bishops at that moment. He got it.
The bishops deliberated over a set of reforms that would go further than any they had passed to date. It would be dubbed the Charter for the Protection of Children and Young People, and it generated heated debate.
It was controversial for the bishops to say, we must report to law enforcement.
I have gotten plenty of letters accusing priests with no reasonableness at all.
It was controversial for them to say zero tolerance.
We have to come to a standard, not of zero tolerance, but a standard of forgiveness.
And not every bishop agreed with every jot and tittle, but we did agree that we would do it and we would do it together.
The final charter included a zero tolerance policy, a promise to report to public authorities allegations of sexual abuse of minors, and a commitment to transparency and openness.
239 yes, 13 no, no abstentions. The action item passes.
To ensure that dioceses implemented the new policies, Bishop Gregory appointed a national review board made up of lay Catholics and chaired by Oklahoma's governor, Frank Keating.
We were not just a showboat. We were not a bunch of Catholics selected to try to cover up and to avoid.
Arguably, they are obstructing justice, or arguably, they also are accessories to the crime.
But in the months that followed, Keating found some church leaders still clung to secrecy. In Los Angeles, home to the largest archdiocese in America, Cardinal Roger Mahoney was fighting a pitched legal battle to keep personnel records of accused priests out of the hands of prosecutors.
The DA at the time in Los Angeles called me, who was a Catholic, by the way, and he said, I need your help because they're shutting us off. They're not giving us access to anything. I said, what? I mean, there ought to be transparency. That's what the bishops want. But that was not the behavior of some of the bishops, which, quite truthfully for me as a Catholic layman, was stunning and unforgivable.
In frustration, Keating spoke out in the press, comparing some members of the church hierarchy to La Cosa Nostra. Facing threats of his ouster, Keating resigned, but says he made a parting request of Bishop Gregory.
That you all will continue what you are doing to address these problems, clean them up, and make sure that you drive a stake through the heart of that misbehavior.
In the ensuing years, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops has commissioned studies revealing that since 1950, some 17,000 minors have reportedly been sexually abused by over 6,000 clergy. Wilton Gregory insists that the reforms passed in 2002 have made the church safer.
Dioceses now have in place programs that are intended to protect children. We have protocols that our clergy are required to follow. That's good progress.
Of course, the church is safer today because so many of the victims have been speaking up and exposing predators.
But Blaine and others contend there's a basic issue that still has not been addressed, accountability for bishops.
The people who are in positions of authority, who allowed this to go on and who have covered up the sex crimes, are still in those positions.
In other words, my dear brothers and sisters, tail of the snake, but not the head. The head of the snake is the bishops. They cut the tail, they get rid of course, they make a show. They're not getting rid of anybody. They're trying to save face by defrocking a few priests. But the problem is not the tail of the snake, the problem is the head, which is the bishops, the archbishops, the cardinal, and even the so-called Holy Father himself, who is not holy.
Bottom line is that there are consequences for priests who abuse. There are no consequences, or there have been none, from the Vatican for bishops who have then in any way enabled that abuse.
So when you cut the tail off the snake just wiggles off, you know, slithers off into the grass, into the pasture, and survives. You got to cut the head of the snake off, which is not going to happen because it's Mystery Babylon.
Case in point, Kansas City Bishop Robert Finn. Although he was convicted in court for failing to report a priest who took pornographic photos of young girls, Finn is still bishop today. And even Cardinal Bernard Law, who resigned as head of the Boston Archdiocese after mishandling sex abuse cases, went on to preside over one of Rome's most important churches and remained on a Vatican committee that handled cases of sexual abuse.
Some people said, gee, what a relief for him. He didn't have to clean up the mess he made. He got to move on to Rome.
To date, sex...
He got to move on to the city of the Seven Hills, where the woman sits in all her glory, power, and strength, riding on the beast, on the shoulders of Antichrist.
Abuse cases have cost the church and its insurers over $3 billion. But especially since 2002, victims have also pressed for the church to turn over its files on accused molesters. In early 2013, the Archdiocese of Los Angeles released thousands of pages, revealing that in the 1980s, Cardinal Mahoney and a top aide tried to shield admitted sex abusers from law enforcement.
This was clearly a cover-up on the part of Mahoney. This was shocking material.
Since then, thousands more newly released documents have revealed alleged sex crimes and cover-ups, mostly decades old, in Milwaukee, the Twin Cities, Joliet, and Chicago. Pope Francis has promised a new committee will advise him on how to deal with what he's called the shame of the church. For Wilton Gregory, the prolonged struggle to put this crisis in the past brings to mind a teaching of Niccolo Machiavelli.
If a prince, if a leader is going to give away 1,000 ducats, he should do it 1 ducat at a time, because people forget. But if he has to slay 1,000 soldiers, he should do it in 1 night, because people forget. The constant revelation, the continual disclosure of bad criminal behavior keeps this issue alive. And it's as though it's a never-ending drama.
Now, here's a Catholic bishop letting us know that this pedophilia ring within the Catholic Church, which is sanctioned by the Catholic Church, is protected by the Catholic Church, this will be ongoing. He just said this is ongoing. Why? Because she's Mystery Babylon. That's why.
Barbara Blaine is hoping people won't forget. When a United Nations panel in Switzerland recently subjected Vatican officials to an unprecedented full day of questioning, Blaine was there with questions of her own.
Number one is, are they turning the evidence of sex crimes over to the police? And number two, are they punishing any of the bishops who have enabled and covered up for the sexual predators?
To both questions, the answer is no. The governmental powers are going to protect Mystery Babylon because they're in it together. Remember, the powers that be, the political powers that be, are the emerging anti-Christian system. They're going to protect the Great Whore. The Great Whore gets to ride on the shoulders of Antichrist. So no, they're not going to force transparency, and no one's getting rid of these bishops who, again, remember, she's the mother of harlots, puts out harlots. She doesn't put out virgins. Mystery Babylon does not put out holy servants of God. She puts out defiling servants of Satan. So the answer to both questions is no.
If they would do either of those two things, that would give me hope that children will be protected in our church. But they fail to do either one.
Therefore, nothing's changed. They do all these committees, all these panels, they have all these conversations, they have all these meetings. But in the end, nothing gets resolved. Everything gets swept under the carpet, if you will. All right. Not only are Catholic priests known for centuries of child molestation, and I say centuries, I can take you back into the annals of medieval church history and show you that this was going on then. But also, because of this thing called celibacy, Roman Catholic predator priests are seeking out women in the church, nuns in the church, and getting them pregnant, and there are many children of priests. This is another kind of sexual predator, one who targets women. Listen to this audio.
And BostonGlobe.com investigates the children of Catholic priests. The paper reports there are thousands of people who have strong evidence they are sons or daughters of clergy members. They say they're often neglected or shamed into silence. In an interview you'll see only on CBS This Morning, Boston Globe Spotlight team reporter Michael Resendiz is here. But first, we have a look at Spotlight's legacy of groundbreaking reporting.
Mr. Gagin, what do you say to your alleged victim?
Gagin is accused of molesting dozens of children from the 1960s until his retirement in 1993.
In 2002, the Boston Globe Spotlight team ran more than 600 reports revealing a scandal within the Catholic Church. Hundreds of priests had sexually abused thousands of children over decades, and church leaders covered it up.
Unprecedented calls for the resignation of the most powerful man in the American Catholic Church, Cardinal Bernard Law.
The paper won a Pulitzer Prize for the coverage.
They knew, and they let it happen! Two kids! Okay?
The reporters became the story in the 2015 movie Spotlight.
And the Oscar goes to...
It won two Oscars, including Best Picture.
Spotlight.
This morning, the Spotlight team unveils a new report on what...
So the new report is that now these predator priests, another group within the church, who have another kind of sexual proclivity, are targeting adult women, fathering children with these adult women, sexual predators, whom the book of Jude and the book of Second Peter and Jude tells us that these people have eyes full of adultery. That's these sexual predators.
It calls a worldwide and systemic problem within the Catholic Church, priests fathering illegitimate children.
Did you hear that? It's a worldwide systemic problem. The first worldwide systemic problem in the Catholic Church is pedophilia. The second worldwide systemic problem in the Catholic Church, which is global, is fathering of children.
Priests fathering illegitimate children.
I was blaming myself. I was his mistake. By him having a child, I was his mistake.
Well, we reached out to Vatican officials for a statement regarding this new reporting from the BostonGlobe.com, but they declined to comment. The Boston Globe's Michael Resendiz joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
First, this is incredible reporting. I know you spent so much time on it. First, how many children of priests might there be?
Well, we know there are many more than people assume, probably in the thousands. Just recently, about 2 years ago, a son of a priest in Ireland set up a website called Coping International, and he's heard from scores of people from all over the world who are the sons and daughters of Catholic priests.
What prompted you to start this investigation?
I first heard from a fellow named Jim Graham, who's in the story today on Globe.com. And Jim spent many years tracking down evidence that a priest was his father. I was impressed with what he suffered, the pain he endured, and I was impressed with his detective work. But still, it was just one person. And it wasn't until Vincent Doyle called me and gave me the information he'd collected through his website that I realized this was a systemic situation and deserved my full attention.
Systemic is an interesting word because it is said that the church would like you to believe these are very rare exceptions.
Yes, that's correct. I think it's very similar to the situation with clergy sex abuse. Whenever there was a scandal, the church treated the situation as if it was exceptional when in fact it was systemic. And I think we're looking at the same thing here.
I think most people wouldn't even think about the children of priests, but when you really play it out, it makes sense that there would be children of priests. And then you write in the article that many of them suffer. They have to suffer in silence. They have to suffer in secrecy. How does it affect them growing up?
Well, I think they suffer emotionally. I think they suffer financially. I think they suffer spiritually by not having a loving father, and very often by not having a father who provides adequate child support.
So what will happen to those who now are identified as fathers of children?
Well, these people are coming together. It's remarkable to see this community being formed right now as we speak. And they would like the church, the Vatican, to put some policies in place to end the secrecy and also just give some bishops a little bit of guidance on what to do when they learn one of their priests has fathered a child, because right now they have.
They want the bishops to be given some guidance from the Pope, but the guidance is found in the Word of God. That's the guidance. A guidance they don't want. They don't submit to the Word of God. Again, it's an apostate church. And so many Christians believe, oh, the Roman Catholic Church is just one denomination of Christianity. It is not. It is Mystery Babylon.
I have no guidance.
But Michael, go ahead, Nora.
While the Vatican has not been clear, Cardinal Sean O'Malley has, and he has been an advisor to the Pope and the head the Pope's Advisory Commission on Protecting Minors, and he gave this statement to us at CBS News. He said this: if a priest fathers a child, he has a moral obligation to step aside from ministry and provide for the care and needs of the mother and the child in such a moment. Their welfare is the highest priority. Is this a moment, too, for leaders of the church like Cardinal O'Malley, who responded to the original Spotlight report, to do something serious about this?
I think so, and I think Cardinal O'Malley's statement is important because I think more often than not, the first reaction of a priest is to cover up the fact that he has become a parent. And what Cardinal O'Malley is saying, and I think this is in line with some of the things Pope Francis has said, is no. If you're a priest and you father a child, your first responsibility is no longer to the church, it's to your child.
Michael, I thought this was interesting. You talk about in the African context, but you said this is not isolated. Celibacy means a priest does not get married, but that does not mean he cannot have children. Does that make sense?
Yes, I think in other parts of the world, many parts of the world, priests may have a different idea about what celibacy is and what the expectations are of a priest.
All this is happening at the same time. A cardinal is in Australia defending himself.
Yes, Cardinal Pell.
Exactly. A very powerful cardinal.
Cardinal Pell is the third highest ranking official at the Vatican. He's been criminally charged in Australia, as you said. And it's very, very significant development. I think it's significant because after all these years of having to confront the problem, the Vatican has still not come up with a set of policies for dealing with the problem of clergy sexual abuse.
And are most of these children born from abuse? Or are they from consensual relationships?
Oh, I think very often they're from consensual relationships. You know, I think, for instance, many of the mothers never file for child support because they still love the father of their children. Often they're devout Catholics who believe that the man who fathered their child is not only a father but a representative of God.
And often they were told, "I'm going to get out of the priesthood and we'll be together."
Yes, I think some of the mothers have really been strung along for many, many years.
Thanks, Michael. Great reporting.
Incredible reporting.
Yeah, great reporting, but nothing's done, ever. Now, here's the last one. And I can just play one audio after another. Now, this is an audio about nuns who are abused, raped by Catholic priests, and once impregnated, forced to have abortions. Listen, the can of worms just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Listen to this. Abused nuns reveal stories of rape and forced abortions.
This week, Catholic bishops are meeting in Baltimore to discuss the priest sex abuse crisis in the American church and will vote on measures to hold themselves accountable. Throughout the church, the Vatican has put in place new rules on reporting abuse. The most concrete steps the Vatican has taken to counter the crisis. Most of the attention has focused on child victims, but a special correspondent, Christopher Livesay, reports from the Vatican, now in the Me Too era, there's a growing chorus of nuns speaking out as survivors of abuse as well.
They're known as brides of Christ, revered for their quiet service, not for speaking out. But that's beginning to change.
Well, I joined the convent in 2003, and I was raped in 2008.
Raped, she says, by a priest. A devout Catholic from Germany, Doris Wagner was 24 years old, living and working at this religious community just outside the Vatican.
And he came into the room, closed the door behind him, was sitting on my right hand on the sofa, and he just started to undress me.
When she told her superiors, she says the priest went unpunished, allowing him to rape her again and again.
But this whole time, the perpetrator was still living in the same. So you had to actually see your rapist.
Every day.
Every day.
He was preaching in the chapel. He was giving me Holy Communion. He was sitting at breakfast, at lunch, at dinner, at the same table. I was ironing his shirts.
Story after story, like Wagner's, is reaching a crescendo. In India, a bishop currently faces charges for repeatedly raping a former mother superior, and a recent investigation by the Associated Press found cases of abuse across four continents. Now, the Vatican can no longer ignore the scandal.
This year, Pope Francis made a shocking admission and acknowledged what had been a long-standing dirty secret of the Roman Catholic Church, that some priests had been sexually abusing nuns. It was a stain they could keep under wraps. That is, until the Me Too movement. Now, religious women are beginning to speak out, and a Nuns Too era has been born.
Helping break down that wall of silence was, of all things, a Vatican magazine, Donna Chiesa Mondo, or Women Church World. Its all-women staff included former editor Lucetta Scarafia. She listened to hundreds of stories from nuns, and in February published an article accusing the all-powerful priesthood of not only exploiting them for sex, but first and foremost, for their labor.
Dal lavoro più elevato, che è il lavoro.
It happens as high as the Vatican ministries, where women carry out secretarial work and translations, but they can never be promoted, and the men get all the credit. They also exploit nuns as housekeepers. They do all of the cleaning, prepare all of the food without fixed hours, all day, every day. Priests see this almost as their right to take advantage of women.
They're not paid for their work. There's no chance of advancement. Some people have likened this mistreatment to slavery. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. Given this habit of servitude, it's easy to understand how it can morph into sexual exploitation.
Doris Wagner says that's what happened to her in Rome.
I was only working in the kitchen, chopping vegetables, cleaning. Anybody who wants to become a nun wants to serve and wants to give herself to God. And that's why it is so easy to abuse nuns, because they are so ready to listen to others who tell them how they are supposed to be. Again and again, I was reproached for not walking right, not looking right, not sitting right, not talking right, because some men in the house had a problem with me.
When you say they had a problem with you?
They felt in a way attracted to us, you know.
And this was your fault?
It was our fault.
She says it was also her fault when she reported the priest's advances to her female superior.
She became furious. She literally jumped on her feet and was shouting at me. And she was very angry with me. And she said, "You are dangerous for him. Leave him alone."
They tell them, keep quiet or our congregation will be persecuted. These women can't even contemplate leaving because they don't have any alternative. They have no trade, no support group. They've severed ties with their families, so they are forced to endure this abuse that often leads to pregnancy, and the priests or bishops force them to have abortions.
So nuns are forced by the fathers of these children, by priests, to have abortions?
Yes, and these poor women now have to live with the anguish of having committed a mortal sin. We have many testimonies from nuns who had more than one abortion in this way.
Testimonies that became too much for the Vatican to handle, she says. Soon after they were published, the director of the Vatican newspaper, Andrea Mondo, told her that he would now be sitting in on the editorial meetings of her women's magazine. Mondo denied any interference in the editorial process.
There was an effort to suffocate our voice, so we decided before we've suffocated, it would be better for us to resign.
And almost all of the women did indeed resign. Change, she says, is happening, thanks to nuns speaking out. This year, the Vatican held an extraordinary summit on sex abuse by priests. Some of the most powerful testimonies there came from nuns, such as Sister Veronica Adeshola Abenibo from Nigeria, who read the Riot Act to a room full of the most powerful men in the Catholic Church.
I think of all the atrocities we have committed as members of the Church. I'm saying we, not they.
Obinibo sits on the executive board of the International Union of Superiors General, which counts some 450,000 women religious leaders. It's recently called on nuns across the world to report abuse and held a rare meeting in Rome where Pope Francis, surrounded by nearly 1,000 sisters, once again confessed that priests are abusing nuns.
I'm aware of the problems. It's not just the sexual abuse of nuns. You didn't sign up to become some cleric's housekeeper. No.
No.
On the sidelines of the meeting, the executive board agreed to an impromptu discussion with me.
A church, as a church, has had so many cases and has been defending itself like on a football field.
Can you provide any insight as to what the Pope could do to address and try to fix this problem?
I think we know what we can do. The future is to create a culture of care. Care at every level, an open space. It's not shameful. And also to be able to say wherever we need to say it, who the perpetrator was, because we would not want this person to continue doing hurting other others.
We can be a dangerous memory. You know, we can call the church to what they are professing, that they want to see changes made, but they don't happen.
Right after the meeting, Pope Francis made a surprise announcement and issued a new rule calling on local dioceses to create public and easily accessible offices to receive abuse claims. The rule also lays out a way to proceed when prelates are accused of a cover-up or carrying out abuse themselves. It's perhaps the Pope's most concrete attempt to battle abuse. But critics say the law has a major weakness. It still keeps the handling of cases within the church, as opposed to involving outside authorities, and does not...
In other words, the foxes are in charge of the hen house. The foxes... Listen, these people want you to bring the reports to them. They keep the reports internal. Don't go to the authorities. Don't go to the police. Don't go to the district attorney. Don't go to your sex abuse center. No. You come to us. We'll take the report. We'll deal with it internally, which they never do. The foxes are in charge of the hen house.
Detail any specific punishments for prelates, like the one who raped Doris Wagner.
And they should make sure that everybody who is either perpetrator or has protected perpetrators is legally persecuted.
Something that never happened to her rapist. Instead, she says he's still a priest in the same community today. The trauma was so unbearable, she says she almost committed suicide. One day, when she was high up on a balcony inside the Papal Palace, right in front of the Pope.
And I could jump on the square. Would have been so easy. And, I have my leg already half up the wall.
Instead, she decided to speak out. It was a long process that eventually led to her leaving religious life. Today, she works as a headhunter back in her native Germany and hopes that young women entering the convent today do so with open eyes.
She should be aware that sexual abuse of nuns exists and that as long as victims don't speak out, perpetrators will just go on. So I actually have the responsibility to speak.
For the PBS NewsHour.
And there you have it. So what are the colors of Mystery Babylon? Purple. That's the color of bishops. As bishops, if you serve Mystery Babylon well, and you hide all her sins, and you help in the cover-up, then you go to the next color. The color is scarlet, cardinal of an archbishop. So there you have it, saints, Mystery Babylon. It's in the world, it's thriving, and we haven't seen anything yet. Wait till Antichrist shows up. Then you will see the Roman Catholic Church surge into great power. Well, that does it for our series this week. I love you in the Lord. Stay blessed. Stay encouraged. Have a great 4th of July weekend, and I will see you in church on Sunday. God bless.